Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Losers, in other words.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Happy Friday. Sun is out. Welcome back. I'm Mike Shope. Bulldog is off today. The guy's got to have his Valentine's Day off. He loves it that much. Say what you want. Really, say what you want. On the Wester hotline now is Steve Palazzolo. Always happy to have Steve on with Pro Football Focus. Steve, last time you were on, we talked a little bit about your baseball career. Is that common? I do see it on Twitter right at the top in that little bio section. So do you get a lot of questions about pitching in the Giants organization a decade or so ago?
Yeah, I do, especially if I do Bay Area radio. Always, fun to discuss. And, when minor league baseball salary structure comes up or various things like that, I'm always quick to chime in on stuff like that. So,
how about when there's a massive scandal in the sport and everybody's talking about whether one team, I think we know that one team cheated like that. Steve, I am blown away by how the other players are reacting. We get very little of that in sports, that sort of honesty and anger. But listening to Cody Bellinger and Aroldis Chapman and Strasburg, like, holy cow. And these guys apparently, too, are not afraid of some sort of similar implications being made about them or their teams. Like, it is just totally everybody against the Astros right now.
Yeah, so baseball is interesting because I didn't realize this until I got out of the game and had to work a quote-unquote real job analyzing football. I've still not worked a real job, but working with non-baseball players, when you're in baseball, it is this, you're with everybody for 200 straight days. There's 10 off days during the season, and a lot of people are just like looking. It's like social media. Everybody's kind of like looking for something to be offended by. So I think baseball players by nature are just like looking, like really like being offended. And then when you have a big scandal like this, I mean, you guys get offended when, you watch the home run for too long. And then I got to throw at you and these unwritten rules, which again, I was, I did that when I played, I thought like that. And then when I stepped away from the game, I'm like, that's pretty stupid the way baseball players think and look to be offended and look to get mad at each other for various things. So my point is, a scandal like this, that's easily going to trigger everybody else around the league because that's your career. That's, pitchers giving up home runs. That's a lot of money left on the table. So I'm not really surprised that those are the angry reactions.
Interesting. Do you expect during the season for there to be, brawls? Like a physical, some sort of retaliation? What do you think we might get, at least at the beginning of the season, perhaps?
Yeah, I think early on you might just – I hope it doesn't become a full season thing. I think if people are really upset about it, you're going to see pitchers get, one brushback pitch, maybe one per player, whatever it is, one per team. Like, here's our warning, right? We're upset about this. But again, as I've stepped away from the game and aged and matured, I think the whole concept of throwing a baseball at someone else because you're upset at them is just silly and ludicrous and just ridiculous. It really is. It's a kid's game. And that's a kid's way of reacting, but I do think that's probably what you're going to see, probably early in the season as people try to make their point. Hey, we're upset with what you guys did.
Yeah, and I appreciate that point and agree with it. Like, I'm not a fistic justice guy either, but players are going to want to think that they're owed something, and they might actually be owed something in certain cases. But does that really settle it? I don't know. I get it. Steve Palazzolo of Pro Football Focus. All right, so. Checking your Twitter, as I often do, I know most recently you've tweeted about Joe Burrow a little bit. Just so that I know as we start to talk here, where is more of your focus? Like, are you into the draft more right now? I mean, the free agency thing at quarterback could get really wild, and so I'm excited about that, and that's first. What are you thinking about more often?
Yeah, everything, really. I mean, I'm currently behind the scenes working on a product for our NFL team customers that's really focused around team building and essentially taking our information, which every team, they're already clients, but I'm trying to help take it to the next level for them and give them kind of surface all of our insights when it comes to team building and player evaluation and all that fun stuff, player valuation, how much these guys are worth. So all of it's on the table for me at this point, free agency, cover, thinking about the draft, not as deep as I have before, but, you know, hitting on some of the top guys at this point. So to me, it's just team building season, and I think this is the most fascinating time of the year because there's so many decisions to be made between free agency, releases, trades, and then eventually the draft. So I think it's more just all-encompassing team-building season right now.
I see. Well, I'm curious about what you're working on. What maybe new what kind of growth areas are there in how Pro Football Focus is able to evaluate players? Where is this section or this portion of football analytics like really growing? And maybe you could talk about that a little.
Yeah, so again, we have all 32 NFL teams as clients, and they get our massive database, and they implement it into their weekly processes when they're preparing for teams, and then also in the offseason when they're, you know, making decisions on players. I'm hoping to definitely take that to the next level, and you know, we started out as just player grades and evaluating every single snap, but we've got our entire research and development team, really smart guys, math guys who know football, played football, even some of them. And just putting values to that. So if a quarterback has a similar grade as, say, a guard in the PFF system, obviously the quarterback's more valuable, but by how much? And how do you compare players across positions when it comes to just trying to achieve more wins as a team using, you know, baseball's wins above replacement metric? We have a football version of that that we've been developing. And then, you know, putting a price tag on that. How much should you pay the top guard in the league versus, say, the top defensive tackle versus, say, the top quarterback? So those are all the questions we're hoping to answer, trying to answer, and continue to just add data to, and you know, surface that stuff for our NFL team clients, so hopefully they can, you know, further, you know, put that into their decision making process.
Is it getting easier to measure players' play, whether that's just through technology or some access that you gain? Is it getting easier to be able to tell play to play how well guys are doing? I mean, however that might manifest.
I don't know that it's becoming easier. I think the PFF system, which started, you know, over 10 years ago, was, you know, hey, we're gonna watch every player on every play and put what people would call a subjective grade, but it, like, it's a grade based off of a rubric. So we're all seeing the game through the same eyes, and it's going to be consistent from 2006 when we started through 2019. So that level of consistency and detail, it's not necessarily easy to achieve. I guess the easier thing is taking stuff like next-gen stats and being able to, you know, take a wide sample and at least put stats to new stats to the players. But I think the idea of saying how well did this guy play football still takes the time and effort that we put in, which is watching every single snap at both the NFL and FBS level, and then taking all that data, giving it to our smartest guys and saying, okay, make sense of this. How do we you know, use this a little bit more? And the thing that we found is, you know, some positions are easier, you know, to project. You know, defensive line, our stuff's really consistent year to year. It's easier to project, say, defensive linemen versus, say, linebackers or safeties or whatever it might be. So that's the type of stuff that we're sorting through right now, is which pieces of our information are most valuable moving forward.
Okay. Steve Palazzolo, Pro Football Focus, at PFF _ Steve. Let's talk about the free agency aspect of this then. Buffalo does not seem, I mean, I think maybe we all do, like, not a player in this, maybe at backup at some point along the way here, but a lot of this action that we might see, will happen apart from us, of course. How much do you expect? And does Tom Brady really represent the tipping point in this? Like, how much can he affect if he ends up leaving the Patriots?
He is a massive domino because, yeah, the Patriots then have to figure out what they're going to do. And I don't think anybody really has a read or a gauge on what Brady wants to do or how much the Patriots want him back. If it's the true Patriots way, they put a number on it and they say, here, you're worth X. And, you know, if X isn't good enough for Brady, perhaps he goes and looks elsewhere. I think Brady at this point, though, isn't looking for a number so much as he's just looking for support and a better supporting cast than he had last year. I think he spent his whole career elevating his supporting cast, and at 43 years old, it's a lot more difficult to do at this point, so he does need better playmakers to throw to. But yeah, he is the big domino, and I don't have a feel for whether or not he's going to look at an Indianapolis or Chicago or, you know, the Chargers or wherever it might be and actually explore and see. I mean, my feeling is that he ends up back in New England just because the familiarity does help. But I think that would come from New England saying, look, we're gonna get two or three guys for you to throw to and build from there. But, yeah, the quarterback dominoes are going to be fascinating. Brady, Jameis Winston, you know, Ryan Tannehill likely going back to Tennessee, but you still have to see that. I mean, there's a lot.
Right.
Phillip Rivers, absolutely on the market. There's a lot that has to happen.
I mean, New England should probably add those other players either way, right?
No matter what. Right.
Yeah, the way the season played out for them. What would you say, if you were a Bills fan, you would want? Because I think I'm really torn on that. Like, I mean, Brady is going to be 43, and he's in decline. I mean, that's undeniable, I think. But I don't know. Like, he's been such an assassin against them, and it might feel like I just want to take my chances with someone else. What should Patriots opponents want to see happen?
I think the AFC East would be happy to see Brady go. I mean, I think he has taken a step back from a, you know, on-field play standpoint the last couple of years, but I still think he's the best quarterback in the AFC East. I mean, I think he's more than capable of going out there and putting up a big season if you do have the right supporting cast around him. So I'm sure Bills, Jets, Dolphins fans are all ready for him to move on and, you know, see a fresh new world. I'm sure a lot of NFL fans are just curious to see what happens if Brady moves on and, you know, can Belichick do anything without him? Can Brady do anything without Belichick? I mean, we've been trying to answer that question for a while. I don't know if you get a great answer. He's 43. I don't know what the expectation should be, but I think people are ready to see something new.
Yeah, I'm totally one of those fans for sure. I'm just curious to see what it would look like. You mentioned Jameis Winston. The reports on Tampa, there was one the other day that we were kind of laughing about here, Steve, where it was, no, Tampa really would be interested in Phillip Rivers and Brady and Breeze and Bridgewater and Justin Herbert. Like, where does that leave Winston? Are you assuming he'll be out there?
Yeah, I mean, I thought Tampa Bay should give it a shot as far as franchising Jameis. I think I've always been a Jameis believer in that he reminds me of the one-off breakout seasons that, say, Carson Palmer had in 2015, even Cam Newton, that random MVP season that he had. Cam didn't play like that the rest of his career. He had one incredible season. Jameis's profile is similar to that. He's so aggressive. He gives his playmakers chances to make plays. There'll be one year where all those passes to linebackers either get dropped or he has some turnover luck and the stats look great and that aggressive style will pay off. So I think it's always worth it. Like, it might be worth one more shot from Tampa Bay just to see if you can get that out of them. But it is tough to lock Jameis up long term. I do think they'll be looking. The one thing that would make you say, hey, bring him back is second year in Bruce Arians' system. Man, Bruce Arians has done a really nice job of developing quarterbacks. And he's the one who extracted that career year out of Carson Palmer and has developed guys like Ben Roethlisberger and started the development to Andrew Luck. So there's something to maybe like seeing that through with Jameis, but there are so many QBs on the market, I'm sure Tampa Bay is going to be exploring all options.
Yeah, right. And they have the skill players that, like, the Patriots don't. They have the weapons, right? It sounds to me like more and more people are expecting Phillip Rivers to go to Indianapolis. Do you also expect that?
Yeah, so Indianapolis, I've been, you know, saying this for a while. I really think that the indoor conditions are just an underrated aspect of football. And that's not to take anything away from Peyton Manning and his years in Indianapolis. He's great. Drew Brees, his years with the Saints. But there's something to having eight or more indoor games per season. And I think that you don't have to deal with the Buffalo weather, the New England weather, whatever it might be. It's good for your passing stats. It's good for the passing game. Passing stats are – the passer rating is like 6 points higher. It's 6 points higher in a dome. So I think – when you have a guy like Indianapolis is attractive just for that right off the bat. And then when you have a guy like Phillip Rivers who does, you know, throw some ducks here and there and has some times where the arm looks like it's, you know, disappearing, that could help prolong his career. So I think Indianapolis is attractive because they've built a solid foundation. They have a lot of cap space. They got the indoors. The AFC South is always just wide open. And I think it's a really attractive spot for a guy like a Phillip Rivers, and I think that's attractive for the Colts as well to bring him in because I still think he has enough left, to win.
What would you say, if that happens, to Indy's chances or possibly being even a favorite? Like, would you consider a Rivers-led Colts team? We don't know the draft and the rest of free agency, of course, but like they got a lot of credit for their roster. before Andrew Luck went away. Like, that was a team right. that was like everybody's maybe the hottest non-Patriots or Saints Super Bowl pick last year. Are they still that? Is that right? And would Rivers get them back near that status?
Yeah, I think they'd be right up there. I mean, Houston, they have Deshaun Watson, which will, you know, that's the advantage right now. They've got the best quarterback in the division, even though Ryan Tannehill did outplay him this year. But Watson's the best quarterback that you can bank on year to year, but the Texans have so many holes and they don't have the draft capital to like to plug them right now. So they need to be really good this offseason. Tennessee, it's going to be really tough to duplicate the Ryan Tannehill magic. They've been the team that just has that really solid 8-8, 9-7 type of roster, and then all of a sudden Tannehill has a career year, and it's like, hey, they're in the AFC Championship. That's going to be tough to duplicate. And Jacksonville's still trying to find their way when it comes to Gardner Minshew, Nick Foles, who's the actual guy. They've got a lot, you know, pieces to add there. I think that puts Indianapolis, if they had a Rivers-level quarterback, it puts them in the driver's seat in the AFC South, and yeah, they'd be a tough team to beat, assuming that Rivers doesn't just, you know, fall off the cliff that everybody expects 38, 39, 40-year-old quarterbacks to fall off of.
Yeah. You know, the Bills will have, like any team, I mean, their own challenges trying to climb in the AFC. They did a good job this year, of course, getting to 10-6 and the playoffs. You're mentioning Houston, and we're talking Indy, and then there's, of course, the Super Bowl champions and the team that was the best team in the regular season, and there's the Patriots. And maybe even like bounce back from Cleveland or Pittsburgh, or I don't know. Like, that's like half the conference. How optimistic are you for Buffalo?
So I'm not terribly optimistic. I mean, man, Bills Mafia is all over us lately.
Here we go, right? Here we go.
Right. This is the fun part. So I would say I am incredibly impressed by the job that Sean McDermott's done, by everything that's happened there as far as the way the defense has played the last 3 years. I don't think that they have the best, most talented roster, but they've gotten the most out of them. I'm so impressed with the way they run their coverage scheme and the way they've given Tom Brady and the New England Patriots a lot of, you know, they've made it difficult on them, even when they were at their best in 2017. So very impressed with what they've done there. I just think Josh Allen needs to take a bigger step forward, I think, maybe than Bills fans would have you believe. They won a lot of games this year. I still think he left a lot of plays on the table. He had a lot of turnover luck. I was very impressed with Allen's development at the short and intermediate ranges. I thought his accuracy did improve there, but he still had the highest percentage of negatively graded throws in our system, meaning he's missing more throws than other quarterbacks, and those are usually the plays that stay relatively consistent year to year. It's very similar to Mitch Trubisky last year, where we were saying, look, he had some good stats. They won a lot of games, but you can't keep this level of winning if you're the Bears if Trubisky plays at the same level. Mm-hmm. This year he kind of played at the same level and the stats weren't the same and the output wasn't the same. So that's my big concern, is that year three developments with Josh Allen. And to be honest, quarterbacks don't always develop in linear fashion. It's easy to say, hey, it's year two and he's always going to get better, but that's not always the case with quarterbacks. So that would be where my concern lies. I love what they did as far as John Brown, Cole Beasley, building some weapons around him. Would love to see them continue there, but it's still going to be, it's difficult to win unless your quarterback is playing top half of the league type of football, and Allen just hasn't been there yet.
It's interesting that you mentioned Trubisky, Steve, in that, as we may have talked about last year when we had you on, like in terms of like the basic stats, including games played, Trubisky year one to year two, a lot of us went, okay, like that's a goal. And the right. Bears won their division and went to the playoffs. Like, that's a goal. And it, just in some form, kind of happened, but then you said the rest of it with Trubisky this year, and so we will want to avoid those comparisons this offseason as opposed to last offseason. Before we run out of time here, last couple minutes, Joe Burrow. I am gullible. You don't know me, but I am. And so the week of the Super Bowl, I was starting to buy into the idea that the Bengals might not pick him. Every guest and every conversation I've had since, I basically get, come on, of course they will. Is that a lock to you that they take him, and how do you expect him to do?
The Bengals are an interesting organization where I think it would be a little premature to call anything a lock. I also think it makes sense, you know, even if you know you're going to take Joe Burrow, it makes sense to maybe just drum up interest just in case. You know, if a team sent you their next 15 first-round picks, you'd probably trade it for Joe Burrow. You just never know. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to do that. I do think ultimately they land on Joe Burrow. I love what he did last year in college. I do have some concerns about what he did in 2018, where he was good, not great. You know, he did some nice things, but it just wasn't the best college season of all time, which we basically just saw. So there are some reservations about, you know, how much is that the system and the playmakers, but he excelled in absolutely every area last year. Clean pocket, outside the pocket, under pressure, against the blitz. He did it all. He did it in an NFL system. He also did it with NFL-level talent, which is another story there. But, yeah, I think he's got a chance to have a lot of success. You know, quarterback play and projection is always – it's a wide range of outcomes, but Burrow showed all the skills necessary to have success at the next level. And like any other young quarterback, it's all about how you build around him and how you – you build around his skill set, which obviously LSU did a fantastic job of doing that last year.
Right. Steve, thanks so much for your time on a Friday here. You gave us 20 minutes. I always like it when Joe tells us that you're on the schedule. So I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for having me.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.